Job, job, Brendan.
Shiny and chrome, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast 141 is on the air, in the internet. However, whatever podcasts do, I actually don't know.
We're in your ears. That's what we're doing.
I prefer not to be in people's ears or think about that. I mean, I guess I want people to listen to us.
How else do you want people to listen to this, Alan?
You could have that bone conducting thing where it like they make this set of headphones for people that that run or ride bicycles or otherwise want to keep their ears free for situational awareness but want to listen to music. And I think they're called it's something like skull rockers or head shakers. I forget, but you it's really bad. But you wear them and they don't cover your ears. They come right in and they touch like the corner of your jaw, and it the speakers radiate the sound through your skull that way.
I don't want a skull speaker. I just want some goddamn earbuds.
Well, let's see. This week, I'm back in San Jose. Last week, I was in Florida for a work conference, and I associated another extra 3 days at the end of that trip, not because I love Florida so much, but because Julie, friend of the podcast, and my wife flew into town.
I was going to say, more than friend of the podcast.
Well, she flew into town, and we hung out with a few of my coworkers, and we stayed an extra 3-4 days in order to go to Disney World. And I have not been, previous to this, I had not been to Disney World since my age began with 1. So it was quite a while. It was really interesting.
Quite a while.
Julie remarked that she had taken a picture of one of the things. I think it was the Journey into Imagination ride, or it was Universe of Energy, one of those two. And she said that it's a time capsule. Like the passage of time has not changed how Disney has kept Epcot anyway. And a couple people had mentioned that too, just the Epcot, the future world part of Epcot really does have that kind of late 70s feel to it still.
Is that why do you think that's why the more old people move to Florida, is they think there's some sort of power there that will keep them preserved longer?
Well, the Fountain of Youth was sought for in Florida by Ponce de Leon, the explorer. It's
but
not
was
impossible.
It found there?
I don't think so.
I don't think he found it. If it had been found, he would still be there.
Probably. But the Disney experience is quite good in Florida. The really nice thing in the Florida parks versus the California parks, although it's loosened up in California Adventure a little bit, both Epcot and the other one, Hollywood Studios, have alcohol for sale. And I believe there is at least one restaurant in the Magic Kingdom in Disney World that has alcohol, but it has reservations booked out something like weeks in advance, like multiple weeks, which is nuts. But at Epcot, you can go to the World Pavilions, to all the different countries, and the World Showcase, as I think is what it's called, and you can drink around the world. It's one of the specials is I think you pay $20 and you get like a little wine passport, and it has 6 spaces for stamps that you can go to the different countries to get drinks. It's a great idea.
Did you fill your passport?
I unofficially filled my passport. I did not do the right thing and do that. I just ended up drinking in all of the countries, which was great. The beer selection is surprisingly good. They had a little stand that was all Florida beers. I only knew Yuengling, which is touted as America's oldest continually operating brewery. It was like 1829 or something. And Cigar City, which makes the Hi-Li IPA. They also had in the America Pavilion, which I always thought was weird, like one of the countries featured in Epcot is America. But there they had maybe the best barbecue that I'd had in Florida, which is not saying that much, but it was it was good food anyway. And they had a microbrew station, which was very good. But all of the beers of the different countries were actually authentic, which I thought was nice. So I went to, in the Norway Pavilion, they had Einstock, I think. And in the Germany Pavilion, they had a couple beers that were, according to someone there, they were kegged and shipped to Florida for it. So they're not, you know, it's not something that's brewed here and then kegged here or something like that. So, you know, some authenticity. Figure, you know, with the amount that we were paying for the beers, it made sense.
I mean, I would hope that they would have good booze there. No one should have to suffer Florida sober.
Yeah. that was actually kind of crazy, because on, I guess, every weekend through this, for whatever reason, during this May, is Star Wars weekend at the Disney Hollywood Studios, which is where they have their Star Tours set up. And so they had a little like parade and some celebrities from the movies kind of there. I can't remember his name. Ian McDiarmid, I think. The guy that played Palpatine.
Palpatine?
Yeah, he was there. He was funny. He made little, like, I'm throwing lightning at you gestures at everybody for the cameras. So that was good. But so there were people in costume, which I was really surprised by, because in Florida at this time of year, it was easily above 90 degrees and probably above 90% humidity, which was just hell awful. There was one point where it rained, and the rain felt actually very nice and cooling until it stopped raining, and then it immediately hits you how much moisture there is in the air.
They would be begging for that on Tatooine. Yeah. They got all those moisture evaporators.
Yeah. The, you know, moisture evaporators and power converters, which are the things to go pick up. Those are the best.
Right. Still the best, one of the best robot chicken bits in Star Wars. So he goes to get the power converters and he goes to a strip club. And now the power converters!
But yes, Star Wars weekend is, I guess, a thing in at Disney. I mean, the marketing might that is Disney was heavily pushing that and all the Marvel movies. So that was kind of fun to see that in the park. I mean, no one was there was no one dressed up as any Marvel people, but they did have all the merch at all the stores. So that was kind of fun.
So did you buy a Thor's hammer?
They did not have them.
What?
I did not see.
No one in Florida is worthy?
I guess not. I mean, you know, it's hot enough. You don't want to exert anymore to try and lift something that heavy. But it was fun. What was really interesting was the amount of Wi-Fi that was actually all throughout the park. And I did not expect there to be Wi-Fi everywhere, but there was. And one of the reasons there is because the phone, they have a Disney app that does, you know, mapping and wayfinding, and it shows the wait times at the nearby attractions. So if you're at a ride and you come up and it's like a 40-minute wait, you can look at the nearby nearby rides and walk to one that's a shorter wait. It was actually really cool, but it pretty much depends on having internet connectivity throughout. So I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, that I was able to get internet while I was over there.
And did they charge you out the ass like they did at the hotel?
Oh, no. No. It was amazing. The Wi-Fi was free. Go figure.
You just pay with your privacy.
Right, right. Probably. They're probably using some kind of extra algorithm to figure out, you know, where your phone is and how far it goes and all that kind of stuff in the park. There's a fair amount of data tracking that's definitely present at the park. And you know, it's easy to forgo it. I mean, if you don't want to use like your fast pass, or you don't want to, if you don't want to use the app, you could still, you know, do it natively, and it works okay. Purchasing, they would definitely track your purchases though. So
it would They're be a probably little, to get access to the terms of service you probably now are owned by Disney.
This podcast is now a
50%. I've signed nothing. I've agreed to nothing. But my half is for sale. Hashtag flat earth.
Well, interesting news. Even if you're they're not grabbing your internet at Disney, they're possibly grabbing your internet in other places. And by they, I mean the creepy automatically propagating bots. This is a story out this week that there's a large number of compromised routers out there, and it's because most routers are shipped with a default password, which is actually fairly common. It makes sense from an administrative thing. If you're building these at the factory, they come out that way. But what's also happening is that these routers are those default passwords are exposed for remote administration. So it's one thing to have a default password that's only accessible inside a network, but if someone is reaching into your network from somewhere else and compromising your router, that's less good. And apparently the vector that the security experts found on this one was not a hole or something poked in the router itself, but just the fact that they come with the default password set and it's accessible from the outside. So kind of messed up. It's interesting in that the network of these compromised routers grows by each thing essentially once it's been compromised, it downloads a set of attacks that it then tries on its nearest neighbors. So it's self-propagating. And these are the things that we talked about in another show, these botnets that are used for distributed denial of service attacks and stuff like that. 100% not a thing.
Zombies in any form.
Yeah. Not zombies bad. These routers tend to be like the stock firmware from Linksys or whoever, all the different brands that make them now. I believe actually Linksys is owned by Cisco, if I'm remembering right.
Yes, so they are.
Just really any brand. So go update your firmware, change your password. You know, close the remote administration thing. Unless you're crazy like me, you're not administering your router when you're not at home. You know, even when I do it, I tunnel it through SSH, so it's like double safe. Sort of.
And be sure to set your Wi-Fi name, your SSID to something funny, or make it hidden.
Yeah.
Either hide it or make it funny.
Really funny.
Those are the only two options.
I once saw, it's great if you're living in an enclosed or a very dense thing, like an apartment building or some neighborhoods. You can see where you can see multiple Wi-Fi access points. Sometimes people will change the names of their access points to be passively aggressively slamming their near neighbors and stuff. It's good times. But botnets, bad. It really is just creating more traffic on the internet, which is noise and annoying. So I think that's a bad thing, and only results in more calls to customer service, because all people want to do is fix their routers and have good internet. And frequently when people call customer service, they're angry. And dealing with that is something an Australian company decided to pick up this week. And what they're doing is they're taking...
Oh, Alan, yeah. I have to stop you there.
Oh.
I think it's a New Zealand company.
Oh, is it?
And a Kiwi would have serious trouble with you calling them Australian.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's funny. I thought I could swear it was an Australian company from the article, but I didn't. I guess I didn't look that closely. Oh, well.
They're working in Australia, but it's a New Zealand company.
Oh, it's a New Zealand company working in Australia.
Yeah.
They must hate themselves. But in any case, the company is making... they're taking customer service calls and using them for training purposes, but not in the normal way where you listen back to a few calls and kind of use them as teaching methods for people. What they want to do is take the recordings of irate customers and how the customer service agents respond, and then feed them into a natural language processing algorithm, which then adds an artificial intelligence thing to it in order to find effective strategies for dealing with irate customers. And they still want to use this in training scenarios, but the computers involved would generate the responses to people. It seems like the only likely next step would to just have the computer answer the call directly, in order to cut out the human middleman in there. So we at the Not a Thing podcast have problems with this on a couple levels. First of all, cutting out people. Second of all, generating an artificial intelligence based on angry people.
That's
super bad.
Did no one see Age of Ultron?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You don't see anything about AI ever.
Yeah.
Except AI, which was just boring.
Right. Right. Every Asimov story with robots, anything where the good of the people is determined by a computer.
Yeah. No. Don't no. No. I don't care if you're on the other side of the planet. No.
Oh, it's good. I thought that was hilarious. Because having worked in an IT position at a company, I'm very familiar with kind of working with people and kind of talking them down off of their thing. I wouldn't say it was a script necessarily. It's really getting answering people and kind of getting them getting them calm using empathy. And, you know, computers don't do that part well. They can repeat stuff to you. They can be nice, but you know, I think human interaction has to come first on this one, and so that's where I'm going to stand.
I like that one of the first comments in the comment section of this article, someone wrote, "Why would they do this? Why are you trying to kill us all?" I feel like they really hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yeah, I think they'll probably have some success in generating a model, but I feel like every algorithmic model for generating stuff, at least in the ones that I've seen, tend to become very kind of heavy-handed or really generic and not actually the specialized thing that it needs to be for something like customer service. So I'm thinking specifically of the quote unquote targeted advertising that you get. I wouldn't say it's super targeted. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, I go to a website for X, I see a banner ad for X. You know, and those are things that are generating money and revenue for people. So you would think they would have tuned those a little better, but
I don't know what Australia is thinking. I mean, I know they got another company to do this, but you're already the most dangerous continent on the planet. You've got punishing deserts. You've got the world's deadliest spiders and snakes and sharks. You've got roving marauders, drunk soccer hooligans, and now you want angry AIs? Like, what are you thinking? I don't get it.
It does seem like a bad plan. And, you know, it'll all be fine, I guess, once the oil runs out. So, but we'll get to that.
So we have that to look forward to.
We'll get to that in just a little bit. We'll come back to that thought.
We'll be back, Australia.
So instead of Australia, we're going to jump over to Belgium, where there are some personal privacy watchdog groups that are threatening Facebook with some stuff because they have figured out that Facebook is tracking people, and that's not new. I mean, we've been saying Facebook has been tracking people and using that data forever. But these watchdog groups are saying specifically that Facebook is tracking people who aren't logged into Facebook. So what they're doing is using cookies and other signatures about how you're browsing to identify your identity, whether you're logged into Facebook or not, and then marrying that data with the known logins that come from your computer in order to make connections between your browsing history and your Facebook profile. And so this is one of those metadata guilt by association kinds of things where even if it's not you, even if it were, like, say, someone else in your household or someone else in your business, because quite often those use the same outgoing IP addresses in order to be identified. If they're identifying people based on IP address and then logins, they can make all sorts of connections about what you're browsing and not browsing. And so this is specifically interesting because they're putting forward that Facebook is using these tracking cookies to associate if you're browsing when you're not logged in. So this is like if there are Facebook pages for, or fan pages for certain things that that you don't have to be logged in for in order to see, and then they're silently coupling those connections on the back end, probably for ads early, but I'm sure they can sell that demographic data for all sorts of stuff. So you know, rightfully so, these Belgian watchdog groups are yelling at Facebook about this. So this is noteworthy because A, there's a watchdog group in Belgium that is kind of as into personal privacy and civil liberties as there could be, and it seems like it's getting an actual amount of traction against Facebook. There must be something about how laws work in Belgium that the same thing isn't necessarily happening here, or at least not in a public way. But yeah, personal.
This is now number four reason I want to go to and like Belgium.
Oh, what are the other three?
Bruges.
Okay.
I want to go to Bruges.
Uh-huh.
Because it looks magical.
Yeah, it does.
waffles, which I don't know if actually are from Belgium, but I'm giving them credit.
Yeah.
And French fries, which I will give them credit for, even though it says French in the name.
they just call them frites.
Yeah. See, and if I went to Belgium, I would know that.
I want to
go to Belgium.
When I was in, I think it may have been, it was Belgium. They had a sign when you get on public transit that's like no food, no drink. And the no drink side of the sign looked like a soda, right? It's the kind of soda cup with the straw coming out of it. But the no food sign is clearly those like a paper cone that has French fries in it. It's great. Yeah, Belgium's a thing. Yeah, I think
Belgium's definitely a thing.
So let's see, where are we? So Facebook is getting yelled at down there for stealing civil liberties. Let's move way over. It was a very international show. We were in Australia.
Podcast of the world. It's like Belgium. The Epcot of podcasts.
So we're going from Belgium to Mexico.
Nope.
Where?
Colombia.
No? Colombia? I'm not looking at my notes correctly. But in Colombia.
Don't worry, Alan. I spent a semester as a geography major.
Did you really?
I did. We're covered.
Oh. Well, okay. Excellent. I'll take it. I'll take all the help I can get for this one.
Either you're just geologically or geographically inaccurate, or you're a racist. I'll go with the former.
Thanks. But in Colombia, which is known for...
not being Mexico.
I was going to say coffee, but... and also, apparently, cocaine fields. It's...
No way!
It's becoming a problem that... one way to fix cocaine fields is to carpet bomb them with herbicides and chemicals to kill all the coca plants. But I believe it was the president or otherwise high ranking official has made it illegal to use such chemicals in that way. And so one possible fix for this, which I find is kind of cool and frightening, is they're using nature. So there is a species of moth or butterfly that likes to eat the coca leaves, like, aggressively. And so the thought is that they would deploy these coca leaf eating bugs in order to kind of control the cocaine plant population or supply. I think this is a novel way to do this. I'm concerned that you know, trying to bend nature in this way is going to have kind of unintended consequences. But
nature finds a way, Alan. Also, Mothra. Do you ever know where Mothra came from? Because I'm pretty sure this is how you get Mothra. Is Mothra what you want? Because this is how you get it.
Yeah, so we really need...
Coked up moths.
So we really need to work on work on Godzilla, and then
just a big swatter that we can just drive down to the border and just be ready. I think we could really get Texas on board with this. Really, all the southern bordered states, yeah. Florida could have a swatter. We need Mothra preparedness.
I like, you know, because, you know, we've already kind of, there was the problem in about killer bees coming up from Central America, and so there were a lot of things, a lot of awareness about killer bees for a while for all the kind of states that bordered there, and that kind of, I guess, has gone away because bees in general are going away.
That's a bigger problem.
Yeah, that's a bigger problem. Although I believe the Obama administration did just start a commission specifically for bee
population. Eradication.
Population, like, oh, investigating it, not eradicating them.
Oh, they're not okay. So Obama's not killing the bees.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks Obama.
but specifically for moths. You know, currently cocaine eating moths or coca leaf eating moths are probably a good idea until they decide to eat something else. Like, I don't know.
What would people
be bad? Yeah, yeah, human flesh. That would be real bad.
Then you bring in bug spray and then you're spraying again, which right. just defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Right, it'll just escalate.
But I think
escalate.
It's worth a shot.
Yeah, I think
everybody likes butterflies.
How could
you
be
know
mad?
Anyone who doesn't like butterflies? How could you be mad at a butterfly?
Yeah, right. Only drug dealers could be mad at butterflies.
Yeah, take that, cartels. Gonna beat you with butterflies and smiles. Deal with it.
I want to be part of this government agency whose logo is butterflies right. and smiles.
Now that's a war on drugs I can support. We're going to fight your cocaine with butterflies and smiles.
Just say butterflies and smiles, man. Oh no, that would be great.
That sounds like something that was come up with by like a group that was pro marijuana but anti cocaine.
Oh, that's great.
That sounds like this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'll go on board with that. Yeah. So we're bringing the podcast world tour back to the United States a couple different companies that are doing some interesting things with flavors. And the article that I found linked this to graham crackers. That was the example. And so if you made graham crackers to the original recipe from scratch, it would have a bunch of different grains in it. And the thing is that if you scale that up to make them at the level that you're making them from a company point of view or a global company point of view, you have to make changes and cut corners in order to do that at scale because it's just too difficult. And one of the things that you end up doing is flavoring things in order to make things taste the same without actually using the same ingredients because of things like it would cost more to keep the right ingredients around and have them be fresh. Like, it wouldn't be shelf stable. So things are flavored, and there is a flavor that that scientists have identified that tastes like that nutty, malty flavor in graham crackers, and that can be done with chemicals. In which case, they have to put the word "artificially flavored" on things, or it can be done in a different way. So it comes up as natural flavors. And so that's what the article's about, is that flavors, ways to cheat that label, essentially, to make things be listed as natural flavors. There have been a lot of different systems for doing that. And one of them is you use yeast in order to create the chemical compounds that make the flavors. And usually you can do this without too much weirdness. You essentially feed the yeast the base things, and then you get the thing you want on the other end. But they're taking this into the 21st century by genetically modifying the yeast in order to make more weird, different, interesting flavors. So the examples in the article are, not only can you make that graham cracker flavor that you could through normal chemicals, you could do things like make the components of saffron, which is one of the world's most expensive spices, or vanilla, which is mostly restricted to only a certain number of regions in the world, most notably like Madagascar and the Caribbean in that area. It's interesting because I think from one point of view, it's making it does do it in, you know, a natural process. I think it's skirting the law and definitions of things by using GMO yeast. But in theory, the GMO yeast doesn't ever make it into the final product. The flavor compounds are extracted away, and the yeast stays behind. So you're not feeding people GMOs, you're feeding people GMO byproducts, which I'm pretty
sure. That sounds worse. Anytime you're eating byproducts, it sounds worse. It may not be worse, but it sounds worse.
Well, I'm drinking a beer right now, and that's a byproduct, or the alcohol is anyway. It's from yeast.
I just don't like that word.
I'm sure they could come up with a more palatable word.
That's my major complaint, the wording.
they gotta work on the marketing, is what we're trying to say. But do you think that's a good idea? Like using genetically modified yeast to make flavors that they would normally not make?
Well, as we destroy biodiversity throughout the planet, we're eventually going to be eating some like mono food. So you're going to want it to have as many different tastes as possible. You want your Soylent Green to have lots of different flavors.
I was actually expecting them to be, I wasn't going to go Soylent Green. I was going to go with the protein that you make out of bugs. Do you remember that story with the,
But when we kill all the bugs, then
cream chips or whatever. Yeah right. Chips. Yeah, I mean, well, when the bugs grow to Mothra size, then we have other issues. So
yeah, when we get that interstellar pestilence, like in the movie Interstellar, where all that's left is corn, you want your corn to have as many flavors as possible.
Yeah, you know, the different flavored salts that they have at movie theaters only go so far for the different popcorns, you know.
Now, truffle salt, delicious.
Well, truffles are one of those things, right? They're normally sought out by, you have to have, like, pigs that hunt them. I still don't fully get that. But if you could generate the flavoring via yeast, you're just like, all you need is the base thing, and then you have replicators, like, flavor-wise, anyway. You can make anything taste like anything.
It's not something I'd want. Like, I'm always going to choose the real thing when I have a choice, but some generation someday is going to get to a point where they're not going to have the choice. And we need to be looking to the future and how we're going to destroy it.
So, speaking of...
Make a dystopian future more palatable.
So, speaking of dystopian futures, and coming back to what we were talking about Australia earlier, not the AI, the customer service AI part, but the running out of oil part. I believe we both saw the movie Mad Max Fury Road this weekend, and so that's set in spoiler land. So. You know, keep the podcast on, maybe in the background if you haven't seen it yet, or if you haven't seen it yet, go watch it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, stop this podcast right now. Don't hear the next words out of my mouth. Okay, well, hear those words, but not these words. But not these words.
These words?
No, not those words. Okay, yeah, no. If you're still listening, you really should be gone. If go see this movie. Go see it.
Go it's see it. Amazing. So it's in spoiler land, but it's also in it's based on Australia, or at least the way I understand it, it is and it is Australia this time, right?
Yes.
So it's the fourth in a series of movies that began with Mad Max. It was Mad Max, then The Road Warrior, then Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And then the same director, George Miller, is back to direct Mad Max Fury Road, where it's no longer Mel Gibson. It's everyone's favorite, Tom Hardy.
Much less anti-Semitic, as far as we know.
As far as we know. I mean, he doesn't say much in the movie, so who knows?
No.
But,
which I was fine with.
No, I was very happy with Mad Max from a lot of different angles. It's if you've seen a trailer for it, you've seen a lot of the movie, a lot of the.
But there's the still weight. So much more.
Yeah,
like you get the point of the movie, but it's just more. If you like that, it's just going to be more of that.
Right. The execution of the movie is so good. I was saying to someone right after I saw it. This is what I want out of, like, a Marvel movie. I immediately compared it to the last movie I saw, which was Avengers: Age of Ultron, and this is
so much better.
So much better. I mean, the tension is great in it. It just shows you don't need, like, a lot of stuff to happen for a movie to be really successful. I mean, there are a few plot lines in the movie, but it's very simple. It's pretty. I mean,
there's no plot. There's no plot lines. It's all just character arcs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no real story here.
Yeah, and they don't need to tie all the things together. There's no need or pressure or really just like. Angst to kind of get on board with, you know, how specific characters feel. I mean, it comes across, I think, pretty plainly about the different characters, and so I think it's great. I was very happy with all the main characters, really. it's primarily Mad Max, then Furiosa. By Charlize Theron, and then is it Nux?
Nux, yeah.
Nicholas Holt.
Nicholas Holt.
Yeah. It's great. There's obviously lots of action and explosions that benefited quite a bit. I did see it in D-Box, 3D D-Box. I would forego the 3D and then probably watch it with just the D-Box, because it's great. The explosions rock you. The fight scenes are great. The there's even kind of a low rumble all the time just because of the driving, which I think is hilarious. But that was nice.
Well, there's also a vehicle that's playing drums and guitar the entire time. No, not just any guitar, but a flamethrower guitar.
Yeah, I think that happens pretty early on in the movie, and as soon as that, as soon as the guitar like spits fire, I turned to Julie and I'm like, all right, this movie is worth the price of admission.
No, it's so lean. Like the pacing I think was perfect. Mm-hmm. Like it's basically one or multiple large scale car chases, but there's a good 15, 20 minutes where you can actually let your adrenal system rest and kind of get some character development and then go into the finale.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I saw it twice this week in 2D and I want to go see it again.
Nice.
And I think an argument can be made that Mad Max is not the main character of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it feels kind of like they're turning it into an anthology show. You can have like, yes, it's in the Mad Max universe, but it's not his story.
Yeah, this is Furiosa's story.
Yeah.
Which is really well done.
I agree. I think,
and it passed the Bechdel test, and then some.
I actually was surprised at how, I believe it was rated R, but it's not as gory as I expected it to be. I was given the amount of metal and kind of old school weapons and explosions, I expected like decapitations and dismemberments and all sorts of gruesome stuff.
There's some pretty brutal stuff.
Yeah, it's very brutal, but it's not like in your face on the screen, like blood splattering into the camera kind of stuff. It was surprisingly watchable from that point of view. And in fact, I think, there was nothing that I thought was specifically cringeworthy. Like, oh, I don't want to see that. Which I feel like I get from a lot of movies. There wasn't even a scene that was, very, I don't think there was one that was very particularly like, gruesome for, to the women, for example. Like, I mean, there are,
other than that C-section.
Well, but even that is
which
done,
was mostly off camera.
Right.
I think it did a great job of not showing things.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene where he goes back with the gas tank and like a crowbar.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to go kill that tank car.
Yeah.
And you don't see, you just see him come back. You see the huge explosion and then he comes back. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of good in the movie. So I definitely would watch again. And you really don't need to see the other movies, and in fact, you probably shouldn't.
I wouldn't recommend watching the other ones necessarily. Yeah.
Maybe Beyond
Thunderdome. I would recommend seeing this on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, you'd put Thunderdome ahead of Road Warrior?
Well, I don't know. I think if you wanted to capture the feel of the movie by just watching one of them,
mm-hmm.
I think I would pick Thunderdome only because it was. It's got that over the topness of it.
Mm.
Or just watch the California Love video, which is essentially Thunderdome.
Yeah, I would recommend that instead. Yeah, watch California Love video, and then go see Mad Max Fury Road. Right, this is already. I think a strong candidate for my favorite movie of the year mm-hmm. already.
Yeah.
It's definitely better than anything I've seen so far this year. The only thing I think could potentially topple it is Star Wars. But even that would have to... I don't think it's going to be as good of a movie. Like, this is just a really well-made movie.
A
spectacle.
Yeah, I think it had a lot going for it in the same way that Guardians of the Galaxy felt like for me, because it has more unknown kind of around it. So
I think this reminded me a lot of Dread.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was a very basic story, but it was just such a rich world that was built in the 2 hours that it happened in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like there's so many things that just weren't explained that were just, oh, there's the war boys and they take blood transfusions and yeah.
They spray their mouths with like chrome. With
chrome. Yeah.
Witness me. Oh yeah. my commute home today, oh my God. I was like jumping up and down in the car and stuff. Because we were there must have been an accident on 101. I mean, there were lights and sirens in the left lane heading over there, and I just knew traffic would be really bad, and it was. And for most of the time, I had my window down, but I was right next to a like big tanker truck, and it's just like, oh, I just want to jump onto this thing and like blow it up.
You need to keep some Lancer spears with the explosive tips in your car.
Right, right. I think that's just a feature I'll have to build in, and then I'll build the little, you know, counterweighted pole so Julie can right. You know, swing from side to side, you know, to the cars next to us, clear the lane, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go see if you're on the fence at all about this movie. I don't know why if you haven't seen it, you're listening at this point, because I told you to stop listening. Go see this movie. Do it.
It was quite excellent, and I'm also looking forward to Tomorrowland. Is that this weekend now?
Yes, that's this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think Brad Bird's made a bad movie, so yeah. It's gonna be good.
Oh man, it's beginning. It's beginning summer movie season. There's gonna just be this parade of awesomeness at the end of every show. Now we'll see. We'll see how long we can keep it up. Well, I will do my best to probably see a movie before the next time we record. Have a good Memorial Day, Brendan. It's
ride to nice. Valhalla, Alan.
Shiny and chrome. See you later, man.